You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. I'm Abby, a librarian at Central Library. Here's what to expect in today's episode. First, join us for a conversation about some of the latest and greatest books we've been reading. Then we'll dive into a conversation I had with Susan, who is a super cool, funny, inspiring patron who has just gotten sober. And one very powerful book helped change her life. And make sure to stay tuned all the way until the end, because EJ and I have some really exciting announcements to make.
That's right. Hi, everyone. I'm EJ, a new librarian at the Central Library. And I'm very excited to have officially joined the podcast. You'll be hearing from Abby and I every 2 weeks from here on out. We hope to hear from you, too.
All right, EJ, ready for book chat?
Absolutely. What did you read this week?
So, EJ, this week I read Inferno, A Memoir of Motherhood and Madness by Catherine Cho. So I'll start off by saying that I am a mom. I've said this multiple times, but I'm a mom. I have a two-year-old daughter. But one thing about me is that I actually don't like reading parenting books. The last parenting book I read was What to Expect When You're Expecting. So, but I have found that I liked reading parenting stories. So I don't really want the advice or the best practices, science. That all just makes me nervous, makes me think I'm doing things wrong. But I like to read books about someone's experiencing parenting because it just reminds me of texting some of my friends that also have kids and talking about our kids. So that's the difference. And this particular book is truly remarkable. It's a memoir, as the name implies, published in 2020, 2 years after she suffered and recovered from postpartum psychosis. I appreciate this book in particular because it sheds light on the fact that postpartum psychosis can occur even after your baby's first few days of life, which is actually the most common period of onset. I also appreciate that she's an Asian mother telling her story of mental illness because there are real health disparities between racial minorities and white people. So I wanted to share a few stats that I got before I jumped right in. Which was suicide was actually the leading cause of death for Asian or Pacific Islanders ages 15 to 24 in 2019. Asian American males in grades 9 through 12 were 30% more likely to consider attempting suicide as compared to non-Hispanic white male students in 2019. And in 2018, Asians were 60% less likely to have received mental health treatment as compared to non-Hispanic whites. So I got that from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Minority Health. It just starts it off by saying this problem or this situation affects everyone. And this is Catherine's story in particular. So I loved the way that she told the story. My favorite part was the structure. She, at one point in the book, wakes up, literally and figuratively, in this mental hospital. And then the book begins to tailspin. So time is totally an illusion. We don't know where we are in time or how much time has passed. It kind of feels like she's in the mental hospital for years. I mean, it's just you have no idea of what's going on, or you don't know. Of course, it's the classic case of unreliable narrator as well. So it's a really clever structure. It leaves us feeling as disoriented as Catherine, which kind of helps us empathize with her loss. And then the other piece of the book that I really loved was knowing as you read that Catherine, of course, is okay. And we know this because she's writing the book. So it's different from fiction where you know at least one piece of how it's going to end. So that's interesting. You know, there's two sides of that coin. In a way, there's a hope threaded throughout the book, and you see everything that Catherine does as like strength, and you also see everything that's working together to help make her better. But then there's the sad piece of it too, where every page almost feels doubly heartbreaking because you just know that she's going to be okay and she's going to continue parenting after this ends. And she's going to then have missed that time with her newborn Cato. And it's just a very delicate time, especially because we get so much messaging that we really have to bond with our kids immediately and constantly. So you get to the end, and of course she still has a bunch of hurdles to face, which, you know, I won't spoil, but it is really hopeful and strengthening because reading those stories reminds us of how strong and capable we are as humans. And we can just make it through so much, and then we can even thrive beyond that. This was one of those books where I got to the end and I just had to know, where is she now? It's kind of like when you watch a TV show or you know a celebrity.
Exactly.
What's going on? And I found out that she actually had a second baby, which I thought was really brave and awesome, because when you've experienced a postpartum psychosis, you're very, very likely to go through it again. And I just can't imagine the fear that she must have felt. So maybe she'll write another memoir about that, but I don't think she has at this point. But yeah, she was a really cool person and a great story, not just about the psychosis, but a lot about her background and her family. And
Wow, that was pretty incredible to hear about. I will have to add that one because I think I would be interested in reading that. Even though I'm not a mother, it still sounds like something that a lot of people can gain insight from, and kind of understanding how mothers can go through that and what it means and what it can be.
Totally. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, because of the title is kind of, what's the word? It's splashy, you know, it's a memoir of motherhood and madness. And you go into it because you think it's going to be like kind of sensational, I guess. And so I think people will read it and they will enjoy the thrilling aspect of it, because that's the other thing, is she's also a great writer. So you're going through this experience and it is tense and it's like heart pounding. It's almost right, like reading a thriller. So that's enjoyable, but you do kind of get those deeper insights too, because it's a real story. It happened to a real person.
Really interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Abby.
So EJ, as we've shared, Susan is going to be coming on in a minute and sharing about a book that changed her life. And I know last time you were reading about Enneagrams, which, you know, it's just these books, it's pretty funny. We all kind of chose books about living life and maybe living our, I don't know, best lives or knowing what kind of life we live. So do you have an update for that?
Yeah, so I am still working my way through the Anagram of Waking Up. I will say the introduction to the book does say to jump around the book, read different chapters, don't necessarily read it in order. So I have been indulging in that a little bit, which is a little nerve-wracking. It's a little out of the norm. But I'm not sure what personality I am yet. I think I have an inkling, and they usually say your first instinct is probably correct. But I do want to finish it out before I completely announce to all our podcast listeners what my personality type is according to Anagrams. So this week, actually, I wanted to talk about a book I just finished, which is fiction, which is a little bit of a different conversation we've been having, but it's called The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid, who is a pretty big author right now. This book got really big, I think maybe during the pandemic when people were reading a lot and checking out. I remember there was a long holds list for it. So I just got around to reading it. And wow, what a journey. Let me just say that. What a journey it was. It's very interesting because as you were talking to us about Inferno Abbey, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, there's some really interesting pieces you're talking about, like human nature and human life. And a lot of that I also kind of picked up in The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. So if you aren't familiar with the book itself, so basically Evelyn Hugo is an aging Hollywood movie icon, Elizabeth Taylor, or along those lines. And she's never really had a book written about her, a biography, or an authorized biography, I guess. And so she decides that it's time to find a writer to basically pen her whole life story, which has never really been written to at this point. She picks a writer named Monique Grant, who is a journalist from a magazine, but hasn't written any books, hasn't ghostwritten, doesn't really have any experience. So Monique gets the call that she's going to do this for this amazing Hollywood icon. And she's kind of nervous, scared. Why me? Why am I the choice? And a lot of the book is structured in a very interesting way where we hear Monique and Evelyn's conversations and Monique asking questions, but honestly, Evelyn just lets the story flow. And so a lot of the book is actually kind of time jumping back to her time in Hollywood, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up into the 80s, her time there. So it's a little interesting, the structure. I liked it a lot. I listened to this book, so it was a little bit easier to follow when you're listening to. I'm not sure what the print pages look like, but I'm sure it wasn't too hard to follow along. And so I got to the end and I was driving when I got to the very last couple of minutes and I had to pull over.
Oh my goodness.
So it was saucy at the end. I got concerned for my driving. My mouth was agape. I had to pull over. I had to take a breath because I got so into this book when I was, does that ever happen to you? You get so into a book when you're listening to it and you're like, oh my gosh, I've missed my turn. I haven't gone the right way. Yes. I'm getting really, yeah. So anyway, just pay attention when you're driving and listening to books. But yeah, the end really surprised me. So there is a lot of twists and turns throughout the whole thing. If you're interested in that kind of, it's not historical fiction, it's more literary fiction, jumping back and forth. But if you're interested in that time frame or Hollywood in general, or even just hearing about what Monique has to say, because she is a big part of the story too, it's pretty incredible to see how their two lives intersect in a way that you would never expect. Without giving too much away, that's what I'll say with that. But it was a story of friendship and forbidden love and ambition, and a lot of it really did resonate with me, even though it was a fiction book. But I think that that is just a testament to how good of a writer Taylor Jenkins Reid is. And she's got a lot of big titles out there now. Malibu Rising is on our new shelf if you're interested in reading that. So she's really an exciting author that I like a lot now that I've read exactly one book by her. So I will probably pick up more. I'd be willing to. I really enjoyed it. It was a good listen. If you're listening to it while driving, just pull over for the last chapter at least. It'll surprise you.
This next segment features Susan, a JMRL patron who will be sharing with us about how one book called One Breath at a Time helped change her life as she was just beginning to get sober. I'm talking now to Susan, who has joined us on the podcast. Thank you, Susan, for joining us. Will you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe what you like to read?
Sure. I'm Susan. I've lived in Charlottesville for about 20 years. I am a parent and a partner and am right now in a master's program. And in addition to all of those things, I am also a person who has struggled with alcohol and cannabis use for most of my life and have recently gotten sober. And that is part of why I'm here, because there's a book that has been really helpful in my journey.
Well, thank you for joining us. We are excited to hear from you and hear about the book. So what is the book that you would like to talk to us about today?
Sure. So the book is called One Breath at a Time, Buddhism and the 12 Steps, and it's by Kevin Griffin. And Kevin was which I find just hilarious. He was a practicing Buddhist for a long time, but also a musician. And he went into Buddhism to try to seek enlightenment, but was also like consuming a lot of alcohol and drugs during the time and felt pretty confused about why he wasn't finding enlightenment while he was getting high and being drunk. And what I really like about the book is that for someone who is in recovery like me, who didn't have a strong religious foundation growing up or ever, it kind of gave me some kind of roadmap for how to think of a higher power, because that has been a really crucial aspect of my personal recovery. And what I didn't really appreciate before reading this book is that Buddhism is less of a religion and more of a roadmap to how we should live our lives. You know, it doesn't talk about salvation and what happens after we die so much as how should we be in this life? Like, how can we be good and of service and kind and loving towards others. For me, it was really, it showed me that the things that I already believed, someone else had already laid that down and said, this is how it works. So for me, it's been really helpful in helping me understand why I drank and why I smoked a lot of weed and how I can live a life where I no longer crave those things, that is not just the life that I had before minus substances, but is actually a life that's much more fulfilling and joyful.
So at what point did this book come to you in your whole journey? Did the book propel you, or did you start and find the book? And yeah, kind of help us with this timeline.
Sure. So this summer, someone very close to me had to go into inpatient treatment for substance abuse. And while that person was there, they discovered this book. And at that point, just because of the nature of my relationship with that person, I was like, that's nice, have fun with it. But then a few months later, I became part of a recovery group, and another member there who I didn't have many years of, you know, history and bias and resentment towards said, because I had talked to this person about my own personal existential crises, just kind of growing up. And that person also suggested this book. And it was at that person's recommendation that I started reading it. And that was maybe just a couple weeks into my sobriety, but it really kind of anchored me to it.
So do you think that this book has a wider audience?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that. And he talks about it too. It's not just for people recovering from substance abuse. I think it's for anybody who's having a hard time finding meaning in life and needs some way to reorient themselves for the rest of their lives. Because it's really about just saying that, you know, the things that I believe to be true about the world have not brought me joy or happiness or peace or stability. And because I have been trying to lead the way through myself and my will, believing that I'm the master of my own universe. And what would it be like if I stopped trying to control everything and gave into this idea of some kind of thing outside of myself? It doesn't have to be the Christian God, you know, it doesn't have to be this idea of a cosmic Santa Claus, but, you know, it could be like physics, like the laws of the universe could be the higher power. Just some kind of acknowledgement that there's something outside and beyond yourself that really is at play, right? Like destiny, serendipity, chaos. Chaos could be your higher power. And then it kind of sets out a roadmap to for you to re-examine what you've done in the past and people that you've felt resentful for, and identifying not only who you're resentful towards and why you're resentful towards them, but what that person caused you to feel about yourself. Like, did they upset your self-esteem? Did they threaten your relationship? Really identify where these resentments come from. And it's not about fixing it with that person, because resentment is about fixing it for yourself. The, you know, resentment hurts you. And then you, as you're doing this, you identify people that you've hurt through your behaviors in the past. And if it's appropriate to make amends to them without causing further damage, then you do that. And as you go further in the steps, part of what you do is take a daily inventory. And you think at the end of the day, you think about, are there people that I need to apologize for not showing up as my best self? And then you spend time in meditation or reflection every day to improve your conscious contact with God as you understand he, she, they, it, whatever. And then, you know, the last step is to share this message with others. It's particularly helpful for people experiencing substance abuse, but, you know, can be useful for anybody experiencing kind of anything where they're having a real crisis of meaning in their life. Anyone who's kind of centered their current existence around something that they've realized no longer serves them and actually causes them harm, if that makes sense.
Totally. And I think that that category of people is
most of us
larger than we might think.
Absolutely. I mean, everything about American culture is about self-seeking behavior, you know, about going to school and getting a college degree. And you have to fight very hard to have this career where you just can make money and you engage in materialism. And it's just about growing more for the self. And I think a lot of people get to a point in their life where they realize, well, I've done all the things that you've told me to do and I'm miserable because that expensive piece of clothing doesn't keep me warm at night. It doesn't make you feel less alone and isolated. And so I think a lot of people could benefit from, you know, I guess I sound like someone that's just like, I found Jesus. And like, not what it has been. It's just like, oh yeah, of course the material things and the pursuit of academic achievement, like, of course those things aren't enough because it's not why we're here. That's not the purpose. The purpose is love and connection with other people and being present and showing compassion. And you just don't get that messaging. That's just not in our culture. It is in other cultures. It's just not in ours. So.
And I think another reason this book might also be very accessible to a number of readers is that it's not a come to Jesus moment. There's not one answer. Like if the answer is love, connection, compassion, and presence, that's going to look different for everyone. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be a unique journey and process for everyone. So you'll read the book and everyone will maybe take away something different.
Yeah, it's a book that I think that I will come back to as I continue my journey many times. And my copy is very well highlighted. We never know what life is going to throw at us. And, you know, if you told me 365 days ago, how the next 365 days would go, I would not have believed you. Nor would I have wanted it, but I'm so grateful to be on this side. And so, you know, the only thing that, you know, this is something that the book has taught me, like the only thing that we can count on is impermanence. So I think coming back to this in the future, there will be other things that stick out, but would it be okay if I shared a passage with you that really stuck with me?
Yeah, please do.
And this is related to step one. And step one is admitting that we're powerless and that our lives have become unmanageable. So the Buddha was as concerned about the way we live in the world, as shown by his emphasis on qualities like generosity, non-harming, and compassion, as he was about meditation itself. But the Buddha was intensely practical and very clear about the truth that we can't control certain things. The fact that we are going to grow older and all the difficulties inherent in aging, the fact that we are going to get sick, the fact that we are going to die. The fact that everything around us is going to keep changing and will eventually disappear. So no matter how much exercise I get or how much organic food I eat, I'll die. All the vitamins and supplements in the world can't keep me from sometimes catching cold or the flu, getting cancer or heart disease, or even the disease of alcoholism. Plastic surgery, herbal elixirs, and skin creams can't stop the fact of my aging. My car will eventually wear out. My roof will leak. My children will grow up and leave me, and my parents will die. I'm powerless over all these things. The Buddha saw how much suffering we create fighting with these facts, resisting and trying to circumvent aging, illness, death, and loss. And he realized that clear understanding and acceptance was the key to letting go of that suffering. When I first read that, I mean, it's all underlined, and for me, that led to an awakening. You know, I'm someone that has spent, even though I was a daily drinker and cannabis user, I also exercised like I was going out of style and used to try to eat all organic. And I at one point had personalized vitamins, and you should see my skincare collection. I mean, I have spent a lot of my life resisting the fact of my own aging and death, and I'm not going to get to the end of it and get a prize for dying with the least number of wrinkles. And just for me, being able to let go of these things and accept what is has greatly reduced my suffering. You know, a lot of terrible things happen in this world. And this is something that I've really learned from this and from the program that I'm in. But the suffering doesn't come from the thing as much as our refusal to accept the thing. It's that gap there. That's where the real suffering comes from.
One last thing.
Sure.
What do you think comes next for you? Reading-wise or life-wise or both?
Sure. So I am in a graduate program right now. So I know what comes next is continuing my work. And before the journey that I've had the last year, I kind of thought I would go in one direction with my practice area. And I had no use for spirituality and was surprised that it was part of the way we assess people. I was like, what's that about? But because of this book and kind of where I am in my life, I see myself working with other people, maybe parents who are also struggling with substance abuse, and just trying to spend every day of my life, taking it one day at a time and being present in every moment and just trying to just share the love that I feel inside.
Thank you so much, Susan, for sharing your story with us. We love to share stories about the power of books. If you're interested in sharing your own story, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
Now that we've made it to the end of our episode, we're ready to share our announcements. The first is this. We have organized a game for you, our listeners, to play along with us. It's a guessing game. So over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to give you one clue each episode for a total of three clues per object. Share your guesses with us through social media or, of course, emailing us at podcast@jmrl.org. The first object we're using for this game is located at Central Library. And if you do some sleuthing at the library, you'll know that you have the right object when you see the On the Same Page podcast logo.
If you do find the object, don't forget to show it off on social media using the hashtag #SamePageObject. Here is your first clue. This object honors one of April's monthly celebrations. Okay, good luck with that, listeners. Do you guys have any initial guesses? We're so excited to hear what you have to say. We also have another fun announcement for you all. Abby and I will be starting a chapter-by-chapter podcast book club. We'll all read the same book together, a few chapters at a time, and then come together every episode to discuss where we are so far. If you have suggestions for what we should read, let us know. We'll take your suggestions and announce the titles and reading schedule during our next episode airing on April 29th. Then we'll begin reading in May. We'll be discussing each episode's chapters during our new segment, Overbooked.
As always, this podcast is made possible through generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org. Please hit subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast.
That's all for us today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media or email us at podcast@jmrl.org. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad to be
on the same page.